Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. Calling in live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a fantastic show lined up for you guys today, one that I've been looking forward to for several weeks. We have my co-host, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com, Linda Feinholt, calling in from Los Angeles, California. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina.
How are you?
Waiting. I am doing wonderfully, and I'm so excited for the guests that we have joining us today. And I know that you and Joel Block go back quite a ways. So since our topic today is all about relationship building and relationship cultivation, I am looking forward to both of you sharing how your relationship came to be. Joel, we're going to be talking about his businesses, but only with a very light hand because it's important to understand the context in which he does his business building and his service to his clients. And so, Joel Block, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
It's great to have
Hello,
you with us.
Hello, Joel.
Gina, how are you? Long time.
That's for darn sure. And Joel's actually been on the show years and years ago. Because we do go back a long time, don't we, Joel? Almost 7 or 8 years,
you know, it's got to be 2006. I think I spoke at one of your conferences in 2007. And
yep.
you were very helpful. You made some great suggestions that have been helpful to us. And, you know, I appreciate our friendship.
I do as well, Joel.
So,
Linda,
Joel, I would love it if you would share with our listeners the context in which you and Gina first met, because that was the start of a relationship filled with ideas and information that helped you transform what was happening in your business at that time.
Sure. Well, you know, first, I run an offline business. I'm in the hedge fund business, and a hedge fund is an investment vehicle where people put money in. So, you know, substantial people make investments, either personal money or their retirement funds, and then we travel and we buy real estate with those dollars that get put into that fund. And I had some other things. I was doing some venture capital transactions. I was doing similar things 8 or 10 years ago, and we decided that we wanted to create an online presence. And so my business partner at that time, I guess he found Gina somehow and was talking to Gina about doing that joint ventures or coaching us on doing something that we needed help with. And
I think Matt found me
because exactly.
I was out looking for JV partners for one of the last joint ventures I was brokering. And he had seen a lot of the emails and other messages that I was putting out calling for JV partners for this particular promotion. And I think that's how he actually found me.
Okay. Well, I don't really know. All I know is that he calls me and he says, listen, I found somebody I think we should talk to. And we all got on the phone together. And, my experience, my expertise is really in finance, all kinds of finance. And I believe you were looking for a way to help people finance things. And we just had things in common, and commonality is step one. So we started to talk about what was possible, and I think we both taught each other a few things. And that was
I am sure
of,
we did.
Of where we are. So that was great. And, you know, and one thing, Gina, I remember is speaking at your conference in Sandusky all those years ago, I made very good friends, people I'm still good friends with even today. So through you, I've made lots of other friends, and that's the cool thing about relationships. It's really the leapfrog effect of making other friends.
It really is, and, you know, way back then, I was in this JV brokering business, and I really didn't understand the money side of business as well as I probably should have. All I knew is I had to make a lot of money to pay for all my medical bills back then. And
I really did teach
me a lot about the money side of business. It's a big part of my success today, Joel, so thank you so much for that.
Well, you're very welcome. I live by the premise that entrepreneurs can't really be successful if they don't understand the money. I mean, you can have a little bit of success. I mean, you can make some things happen. But the truth is that people that really make money are the people that really understand how the money works. And I'm talking about the Wall Street skills that accountants and attorneys don't understand. Hardly anybody understands. It's one person in 10,000 that really understands how the money works, because those are the people who are in the money business. And a big thing for me is, just like I did with you, Gina, is to really help people understand how the money business works, because once you get it, that's where the money is.
And once you get it, that's when you can really get maximum leverage in your business. Joint ventures are one form of leverage, but when you get the money, it escalates the level of leverage pretty quickly.
It's a magical thing that just so few people understand. Look at how much money the guys on Wall Street make. They make that money because they create so much value out of thin air. And if people understood it, I can assure you that entrepreneurs would be doing better. And my whole objective is for entrepreneurs to do better.
As is mine.
So
maybe
one of the things that
we can get Joel to actually talk about that today.
I didn't hear what you said. What would you like me to talk about?
I was suggesting to Linda that at some point we can get you to actually teach our listeners a little bit about the money side of business. But go ahead, Linda.
Are you able to hear me? I'm having a little bit of phone problems on this end.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, yes, I would love people to learn a little bit about how money works. And, in fact, Joel is working on some programs that we're going to have him back later this year so that we can talk in a lot of detail about how money works and how people can learn that from Joel. Those are all programs that are in formation at the moment. So what I would really love to do, Joel, is roll back the clock to the pre-internet days, because you've been in the business of relationship building since Gina and I were also out there relationship building. And, people think of relationship building as, building networks or going out and standing at networking events and so on. And it's changed over the years, but I think it's helpful for people to understand the various stages that have been so critical for your building success in your businesses.
Sure. Sure, I would go all the way back to the 80s. I mean, I got my business started in 1985. I got my first job. I was an accountant at Price Waterhouse as a young guy, and my very first experiences were in the late 80s. And they didn't have fax machines. They barely had fax machines. They didn't have computers. They didn't have smartphones. I mean, things were done different. You pick up the phone and you meet people in person. And, granted, your ability to meet exactly the right kind of people was kind of limited. First of all, the world moved a lot slower back then. This is something that's hard for young people to understand. Us old folks understand that pretty well. But yes, people like my kids, they just don't get it. In the old days, you'd have an attorney in New York. You'd mail your documents to the person. No FedEx back then. You'd mail the documents, and you'd receive them. They'd sit on his desk for a while. You'd work on them. And the cycle might have taken 6 weeks for you to get your paperwork back and have everything happen. Now, what happens in, the old days, 6 weeks, now it takes, a day or two. And so there's been a tremendous amount of compression, and we have to work faster and smarter and better. And so in the old days, things were just different. Everything about the world was different at that time.
Part of the essential core of relationship building is all about building trust. And when we roll back the clock, where there was a slower pace to communication happening, you had a chance to to experience an encounter and a conversation with someone and then to gestate on it. And nowadays, with the time compression that's taking place, everything is happening so rapid fire, we almost don't have a chance to think and reflect upon information that we're receiving or the impression we have of people and so on. Don't you find that a reality?
You know, I think that that's largely true. But I think that, you know, some of us who are older that understand the nature of that cycle, you know, really kind of organize ourselves in a way that helps us. So fast forward to now. You know, we don't use the internet for relationship building. We use it for relationship finding. So we find people we want to have relationships with, and then I just quickly get on the telephone and start making it happen with people. You know, I mean, I take people to lunch if they're local. If they're not local, you know, when they come in town or when I travel to their town, I try to look them up. I try to be in touch with people periodically by sending texts and just being in touch and reaching out and making sure that they don't forget who I am and, you know, communicating with them when it's relevant. And so, you know, I find them on the Internet, but I don't think that the Internet is the way to create any depth in a relationship. So, you know, listen, you got a lot of tools in your toolbox. Screwdrivers do certain things, the hammers do certain things, the wrenches do certain things, and you got to know which tool to use in which circumstance. And that's something that I think that people who are a little bit older have a really good handle of. I think my own children, who all three are college age, one is already out of college, but, you know, they don't have the same sense. They don't have the same toolbox that we have. They have a couple tools, but we may not have the great grasp of the Internet like they do, but I think in a certain way we have more variety of things that we can choose from, and you know, it serves us. And I'm trying to help them learn some of those skills because I think that some of those ultimate communication skills are going to be really important. I don't care how technology and computerized the world becomes, people still do business with people they like, that they trust, and that they connect with, and that they vibrate with, and, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
So let's talk a bit about exactly how you're going about teaching the youngsters, your kids, the rest of the skills besides being able to thumbnail instant messages to people and so on.
Well, I think that as they get a little bit older, what they realize is that those quick little messages are cute and fun, but they don't work. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, they have a little place, and you know, running late, I'm here, come outside, you know, those are great, you know, little teeny commands. But, you know, I think that they're even getting, it's kind of obvious to them that there's more to life than a little teeny 3 or 5 words. You know, I don't think they have the command telephone like I would like them to have. And that just is a matter of practice. In fact, one of the things, and this is true of all three of my kids, I can barely understand. They're all good communicators. Sitting in person, great. On the phone, I think the problem is maybe they multitask. I think they put the speaker on and then they run around their house. They're doing different things and they're busy. You know, they're not focused, and it's very difficult for me to talk to them on the telephone because I know that they're not focused on the conversation. So, you know, that's something I would like them to learn. You know, focus. Give the person that you're talking to 100% of your attention because that's what they need. You know, and that's what helps to build relationships and trust. Put your phone away for half an hour. Put it in your pocket. You know, the ball game score is going to be there in a half an hour. The news isn't going to change that much in a half an hour. The stock market is what it is. It doesn't matter. I mean, everything is going to stay the same. So put your phone in your pocket and focus on whatever it is that you're doing and give that person, you know, your clear and undivided attention. Goes a long way. And that's something that, you know, listen, on the Internet, you click one link to another link to another link. I mean, we're multitasking. We have these computer processors that can do 100 things at one time. But people can only really do one thing at a time. And when you sit down with somebody, you know, whether it's a business thing or a date, you know, with a potential partner, whatever it is, give them your attention. I think they appreciate that.
So because we have so many folks who are thinking about this in the context of actually building businesses, your process for relationship building in order to bring leads into your business has evolved over time. You have multiple businesses, in the sense that not only are you assembling people for the hedge funds, but you also have a training arm to the work that you do.
We have a seminar company, and we teach a very advanced program. Actually, there's even a more advanced program, but this is an advanced program mostly for financial people, CPAs, attorneys, bankers, lenders, investment bankers, and people that want to learn how to be in the hedge fund business. We have a standard-setting program that we offer once or twice a year that helps these people learn how to assemble capital. It's been so many years helping entrepreneurs to learn how to organize their businesses to attract capital that, you know, it's only natural that I, you know, it's what I've been doing my whole career. I mean, I run these kind of companies. It's only natural that I would teach people how to do that. And when you referred earlier that success in process, what's in process is some more basic material that other entrepreneurs, people that don't have a great amount of financial training, would be able to appreciate and get them to the level where they could start to attract capital to their business. Because, you know, the nature of business is that it's hungry for capital. It's a hungry beast that just needs to be fed. And if you can't feed the beast, it's very difficult to make investments in your company and do the things that you need. So, you know, that's our seminar company. It's not, you know, but I do find that the relationships that come out of the seminar are so extraordinary that to me, it in a certain way, if I was to rank it as what's important in my business, it's among the most important things that I do, because so many big networking and other business experiences come out of that program.
And because you are running these two businesses, I think it would be great to paint a picture for people about what the cycle is from how people first meet you and become a lead for either the hedge fund or to come and get trained and so on, and step our listeners through how you individually and how your company has structured its communications that are all about relationship building.
Well, you know, this is one of the things that's probably changed the most in the last 20 or 25 years is how we operate. And we've completely changed our mindset. You know, in the old days, I would cold call people. You know, I wouldn't say I was the best cold caller, but I would cold call people. And I would explain to them what I was doing, and I would talk to them about whatever was important at that time. And, you know, your hit rate on a cold call isn't very high. It just isn't very high. You know, that's just the nature of how it is. But, you know, you're talking to a lot of people, and maybe you get referred to somebody else along the way, and, you know, and that's how it works. But now, everything that I do, we use a strategy called raise your hand. So we send out marketing materials to, you know, whoever. I publish a widely read blog, and people look at that material. They read about it. It's usually about either entrepreneurship or capital raising or something related. And people will review that material. And then at some point in time, you know, there's a button on an email or on a website that will say, if you'd like to have an appointment to talk to Joel about one of these topics, click here. And I'm accessible. I mean, I talk to people. I like to talk to people. Partly because you never know what's going to come out of something. You know, I mean, I really believe that I don't sub this kind of stuff out to other people. I like to do it myself. And, you know, so somebody will raise their hand and they'll say, I'd like to have an appointment because I have an issue I need to discuss. Now, sometimes, you know, there'll be people who are joking around and they don't really have anything to talk about. Those conversations will last 3 to 5 minutes. But I'd say most people, you know, are calling with substantial things they want to discuss. I've got a business opportunity that I don't know how to capitalize on, or I've got a situation that I don't know how to make happen. You know, what happens? How do you do it? You know, where are the resources? And, you know, and if I can help them, sometimes those conversations, you know, will last a half an hour. And those are great conversations. And, you know, there's all different kinds of ways it turns out. But the raise your hand marketing style is all we use now, where people either respond to an email or we send out something, you know, through our automated system, and then they opt into to something and we can see how they're doing, you know, using, you know, internet marketing techniques from, actually things, some of which we've learned from Gina. So those approaches, and ultimately, once they do that, notice I still get on the phone and talk to the people, because at the end of the day, people will say, you know, gee, I really trust this guy. I think he knows what he's doing. I need him to help me. You know, at the end of the day, they get interested in what we do by reading our material, but they don't transfer a substantial amount of money until they have some kind of an experience, you know, with one of us personally, usually me. And for my fund, you know, I frequently, I'm an invited speaker at conferences around the country, and, you know, investors will, or prospective investors will come and say, you know, I'm interested to learn more about what you do. I've got some money sitting in an IRA account, and I don't really know what to do with it. And I wonder if you couldn't maybe make a couple suggestions. And so, for example, there's a gentleman I'm having lunch with. He's bringing his wife from out of town on Thursday. He's going to be in Los Angeles. We're going to be having lunch together. And, you know, we're going to talk about it. You know, he told me about how much money he has, what he wants to do. And, you know, and I've made some suggestions, and he wants to explore those further. And, you know, listen, I can't say with certainty, but I'd say there's a good chance that it's going to result in a client-type relationship, and we'll end up managing some of his money for him. And that'll be a great win for both of us. So that's how we do it. It's really pretty simple.
Oh, Joel, there's one thing that you just mentioned that I think is really important. And it gets really short shrift nowadays with everything that's becoming automated, or, you know, automated messaging, or many people who are writing blogs are trying to write to a large pool of people and so on. And it's about how we create an experience with people, even in this media-driven world, this media-driven era. It's so important that people feel they're having an experience of you. Now, you and your company, are there more people participating in those conversations with prospective customers and clients, or are the conversations always with you?
Well, you know, it depends where they originate from. I've got several partners in our fund, and what happens is that, you know, in their travel, they meet people too. And so what they'll do is they'll provide some introductory material, and at some point in the conversation they'll say, listen, I think it would be valuable for you to have a conversation with the CEO of our fund. First of all, people like talking to the boss. They just like it. I mean, if they're going to invest, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars or whatever the number is, they want to know who the people are that they're working with. One of the things they don't like about the stock market is it's kind of a big black hole. You throw the money in, and nobody really knows what happens. You might as well go to Vegas and play craps. That's how it is. So they like talking to somebody that, you know, has authority, has the 25 years of experience like I do, that can answer most all their questions with you know, pretty straightforward answers. I mean, they like that. And so, you know, one of the things that I tell my guys is, listen, you know, we're all going to find prospects, and that's going to be great. But, you know, at the same time, I think that an investor, a prospect, wants to know more than one person at the company. They want to know you, and they'd like to probably know me. So, you know, they put them on the phone with me, and then they kind of do the introductory part, and I usually do the second half of the transaction. Because the second half, besides explaining, you know, more detail and more complex issues about what our fund does and how we operate, it also I also go through the technical part of, you know, making an investment in a program like ours, and how it works and what the risks are. And, you know, listen, not everybody that comes to us is just right for us, and I make sure that they are just right. I evaluate them very carefully, and because I've done a very good job of evaluating people carefully over time, I've never had an investor lawsuit in 25 years, and I've never had a regulatory inquiry from the government, never one time. And I take that seriously, and I believe that the reason that is because I'm pretty careful about who I lay down. There are some people I have to tell them no. They can't come in because they just it just doesn't feel like it's right. You know, and that might be because we don't you know, connect just right. It might be because they don't have enough resources. Maybe you know, what I don't want is somebody to call me in 6 months and say, listen, my daughter's getting married, I forgot to plan for it, I need to get my money back. Because, you know, once you buy real estate, the money doesn't come back too easy. So I try to be very careful and pick people that are a good fit for us and where we're a good fit for them. And that's to me, that's part of the relationship. And people, I just tell them right up front, listen, you know, I have to work for you and you got to work for me. And because we're going to be on the same team for a long time. And I think about things in teams.
I think it's so important what you were just sharing from a couple of perspectives. One is, you know, we may have people who are listening to this conversation who are thinking, well, that's obvious because his transactions are really big, lots of money, long-term. You know, they'll put their interpretation over why it's important for you to screen the people you'll be bringing into your world at the same time as they're screening you. And yet, it's so important. It doesn't matter what kind of business you're in. It's, you know, there's all these wonderful fads that come along, whether it's GE saying that they need to fire the bottom 10% of their employees every year to make sure that performance stays high, or you'll have marketing experts say that you should fire the bottom 10% or 20% of your clients every year to make sure you're only working with the ones where it's a great fit. But part of that relationship building that you're describing is about relationship building in order to determine on the way in who you want in your world. That's so important.
Well, you know, that kind of assumes that you're, you know, making a little bit larger sales. You know, I mean, I assumed if you owned a liquor store, you wouldn't be making an evaluation of everybody that came in to buy a pack of cigarettes. You know, I mean, I imagine that it would be totally different, and that's not a business that I know, and everybody's got to know their own business. But if you're an accountant or an attorney and you're going to have an intimate relationship with a person and you're going to learn a lot about them and they're going to confide deep, dark secrets, and you're going to, you know, be exposed to things, and really you're going to be you know, a guardian of their trust, and you're going to be a steward of capital or something else for them. I mean, they, you know, you need to have a little intake process. And I think an intake process for people who are in a service business is a really good idea. You know, one of the things that that I always found about consultants, you know, you can't be in a situation, because a lot of times consultants run from gig to gig and they just jump around and they're always scrambling and they're on the treadmill always looking for the next $5. The problem that, you know, is that, you know, you can't get so hungry that you'll take anything. If somebody fogs a mirror, they're good enough to be your client. That, you know, it may in the very, very short run seem like that's correct, but, you know, in the long run of building a really, really good business, a business that you enjoy when you get out of bed in the morning and say, I love my clients, I love what I do, I can't wait to service them. And by the way, who do you think makes the most money? I mean, it's the people who just love what they do. Why? Because they're so good at it. I mean, they get so good at what they do because they're so, you know, attached to what they do. You know, must do something on the front end. I was talking to my daughter. She works at one of the big accounting firms, and she's got the client from hell. She's in the tax department, and she's working on this client, and they're changing their mind all the time. They're giving her stuff late. It's just, they're a terrible client. And I asked her, I said, why does the firm tolerate this? Why do they allow this client to kick you around this way? And they go, well, they're a really big client for the audit department, so we're kind of the tail on the dog, and, you know, whatever they say, we have to do it, you know. You know, and that's really a bummer. You know, it's a bummer to be in that situation. Most of the clients they have are respectful. They're nice. They comply. They're all on the same team. They're all, you know, the client, the consulting, the tax firm. They're all working together to, you know, get their job done. But, you know, I mean, listen. There's a handful of clients out there that are just not nice people. And you know what? What I would do, I'd refer them to somebody else. You know, life's too short for people who are not nice.
That is oh so true, Joel. So, so true. You know, especially when you're dealing with your higher-end clients, you don't want to work with just anybody. I know I sure don't. Those people that are the whiners and the complainers and are negative, they just sap my energy. Why should I have to work with them? So
yeah.
In my world,
you know,
I teach people to craft systems that allow people to self-select before they get to that higher level. Do you have any other suggestions on how people can actually get only the clients they want to work with?
Well, I think that the first thing that you have to do is you have to mentally put yourself in a place where you say, this is how it's going to be. And, you know, I'm only going to work with people that I, you know, that I vibrate with, that vibrate on the same frequency as me. that somehow or another we see the world in the same way. You know, you don't want people that, you know, listen, on a scale of black to white, there's a lot of gray in the middle, you know, and I know where my line is on right and wrong. I know exactly where it is, and I pretty much come up there every time. But not everybody's got their line in the same place as me, you know. Some people are more strict, and some people are more liberal. And I try to be pretty strict. I try to, you know, be pretty good if I can, and really I'm pretty clear about this. I can't work with people that whose line is very far away from mine. So I try to get a sense about where their line is. I try to get a sense about how they treat people, you know, how much respect they have for people. You know, I was doing some consulting for somebody who just treated the staff terribly, and I just withdrew. I said, listen, it doesn't work for me here. I'm sorry, I can't help you. I just don't like how it is. I just don't want to be part of an environment that's like this. And so partly, you have to be in a position to do this. And, you know, luckily, over time, I've got myself in a position where, you know, I don't have to tolerate people's crap anymore. I just don't have to. And, you know, I feel lucky to have nice clients, and I want those clients to feel lucky to have me. And that's really how it works. I just, you know, I want that to be the case. And as long as it is the case, Freddie's a winner. And that's, so, you know, how does it work? I don't know exactly how to do it, but I will tell you a couple things about what I do. Number one, I don't charge by the hour, you know. That's not what I like to do. I actually create what I call an unlimited use agreement. People can call me as much as they want, as much as they want. And the reason I do that is because I'm dealing with people who are very successful that I know are not going to call me very much. It's not that I don't want them to call me. I want them to call me as much as they want or as much as they need. But I don't charge by the hour because when you charge by the hour, it makes people go, do I feel like calling? I don't think so. I want them to call every single time they need to, but I also want them to be very busy in their life so that, you know, the relationship with me, I don't want them to buy a friendship and say, well, Joel, I don't have anything to do today, so I'll call Joel. Joel, did you ball game last night? Joel, did you go to the movies this weekend? You know what? I like to be friendly, and I am friendly, but people aren't buying a friend when they engage me to help them with whatever their problem is. People are, you know, engaging me for, you know, what I'm going to help them, and then out of that can grow some other stuff, which always does. So, you know, I think that your attitude is the main trigger in this discussion.
I really like that, Joel. I'd never thought about it that way. But what a difference. Charging by the hour really puts them in a place of scarcity. Having total open access really puts them in a place of abundance, doesn't it?
And let me tell you something. Gina, I know you're all about abundance. That's kind of like your tagline and everything. But when you... It's absolutely shocking, but the people who have unlimited access to me call me the least. Not that I don't want them to. They just, you know, they get so much value from the conversations we have. They don't feel the need to call me every day. They have a link to my calendar. I said, listen, you can put an appointment on my calendar every day, but you have to have something to talk about. See the movies and the Dodger games. There has to be something to discuss if you're going to put a link on my calendar. I said, so, you know, feel free, use as much as you want. Just make sure we have something to talk about. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, I was just thinking, I was just going through a few people. And I don't keep a lot of clients anymore. I have, you know, just a couple at a time. But I was just thinking there's a handful that I just haven't heard from in a while, and I really need to reconnect with them because I just need to check in and make sure that they're on the track because they get busy doing whatever they're doing, and the problem that they have has obviously been corrected. So,
right.
You know, just listen, and that again, that's a relationship thing. You know, our relationship is, you know, if somebody called me and said, listen, Joel, I need to come out and spend, you know, a day with you. I just need to come out there and sit face-to-face. Fine, come on out. Just tell me when. I'll block out the time. You know, and that's... when I have a good relationship, I'll bend over too. I mean, backwards, you know, to help somebody, whatever they need. I mean, they'll, you know, they ask for my help, and if they're really considerate, they're not, you know, bothering me, you know, every single day and calling me three times a day about dumb things. When they really do call, you know, if they're not playing wolf all the time, I'm there for them, and that's what I think everybody needs to do. Everybody needs to get an attitude of really being helpful and really being selective.
Absolutely. There are so many lessons in what you just shared in just a couple of minutes. One of the things that's very obvious is you've got to know exactly who your ideal customer is, or that's just not going to work. So who is your ideal customer, Joel?
Well, my primary business is my fund. And so we're looking for investors, passive investors, people that they want their money to work for them. They don't want to work for the money. So they've got some money laying around either in an IRA account or a pension fund or in a personal account, and they just don't know how to put the money to work and maximize those dollars. We're very good at it. I could give you 10 different reasons why the real estate business is rigged against investors, why the stock market's rigged against investors. If you're not a professional, you're gonna get your head handed to you, and that's just how it is. And we could have another discussion at another time about why this is. But take my word for it. Professionals have a different perspective. I'll give you one simple example. Retail people will buy something like a house and hope that the price goes higher. They don't know if it's going to go higher, but they hope it does because they read the paper and they listen to the news and all this stuff. Professional investors do not buy and hope. Professional investors make money the day they buy the asset. We buy at prices that are so low, and we have so much knowledge about what's going on around us that we absolutely know with certainty how much money we're going to make generally a year in advance. And we're very accurate. And retail consumers just can't do it. They can't do it in the stock market. They can't do it in the real estate market. They just can't do it because they just don't have all the information that the pros have. So, you know, there are people who just wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I'm a doctor, I'm really good at doing surgeries, I am really not doing great buying real estate, and I want to, you know, find somebody to do it for me. And so basically, they put the money with us, and we share the profit. And those are our customers. And, you know, so we're not looking for billionaires, you know, we're looking for, you know, regular people that make investments typically between $50,000 and $1 million. And these are regular people that just have some assets they've accumulated, and those are our customers. That's what we do.
And if we have any of those listening, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they're welcome to call me personally. My phone number is 818-597-2990. You know, or they can call me, or they can email at joel@bullseye.com. G-U-L-L-S-U-I-E, cap, as in capital, C-A-P.com. They can email, they can, you know, reach out in whatever way they want. The second group, you know, is that we just have real estate brokers, CPAs, attorneys, bankers, lenders, other people, you know, active investors, people that are actively buying and selling buildings or other assets. They'll want to learn how to set up a fund and attract their own investors. Those people can go to syndicate, S-Y-N-D-I-C-A-T-E, fast, F-A-S-T.com, and they can get a whole bunch of information about how the syndication business works, and that way they would be able to join our blog list, and they could read all sorts of stuff about, you know, what we do and how we do it and how they could be doing something similar. And entrepreneurs who are, you know, really more in your world, Gina, you know, really should learn how the money business works too. Not so that they can necessarily buy and sell real estate, but so that they can, you know, enhance the capital base of their own company. And with the brand new crowdfunding rules that are just being enacted, life is about to turn 180 degrees for the better for entrepreneurs. It's going to get much easier to raise capital. There already are some crowdfunding rules for donations, but now crowdfunding for equity capital is about to be a serious, serious thing. So, in fact, Gina, I'd like to talk to you about...
So for those who don't know what crowdfunding is, can you talk a little bit about crowdfunding?
You know,
what is
in
it? How does it work?
In a sentence or two, you know, I look for people to put in large amounts of capital, a few of them. You know, so 10 guys to each put in $100,000 or $200,000 into a deal, and I got a couple million. Crowdfunding means getting less money from each person from a larger crowd. So, you know, you're taking 2,000, 5,000, 10,000, from a couple hundred people, and that aggregates to a million. So crowdfunding is a way of sourcing capital. It's a new way. Now, you're still subject to all the rules, and just remember that the government gets very concerned when you start taking people's money and you start doing things with it, because there's always fraud, things they're concerned about. But there's this brand new technique that's been signed by the president here in the last 2 years that's going to really be a game changer. And we'll do something on this coming up soon, Gina. We'll come back to talk about crowdfunding, and we'll educate people on this, because it's a critically important topic that I want entrepreneurs to understand, because it opens the door for opportunities that are just fantastic.
Well, and I think crowdfunding has become a big deal because of the success of microloan companies like Kiva, for example, don't you?
Well, microloans are a form of crowdfunding. That's what that is. It's based on the premise of crowdfunding, where you've got hundreds or thousands of people each putting in $25 and then making a loan to somebody for $2,000 or $5,000 or whatever, and then Prosper and these other companies administer that for a fee. And so it's a way for consumers to have a new investment vehicle. You know, listen, I would say most American consumers are absolutely tired of being ripped off. They're tired because they know the system's rigged. They know it doesn't work. Corporate America is absolutely unfair in all of their practices as far as many consumers are concerned. And they just want to have an alternative. And so the alternative that's provided by these microloan companies is really designed to put the big banks right out of business. I mean, this may sound funny, but young people who are 20 years old, they may never have a need to walk into a bank again. They take a picture of their check to make a deposit. They go to an ATM in the supermarket. And if they need a loan, they know they're not getting it from a bank. So they go online and they go to one of these Prosper deals and they say, I need to get $5,000. And they loan it to them. You know, and 4 days later, they've got the money, you know. So it's really, when I go to these conferences, there are always bankers there. And they're wandering around kind of like dizzy. And you ask them if they've had a couple too many to drink. And they say, no, we just can't catch on to what's going on. We don't understand what this is. They don't get it. They just don't understand what's going on. And the problem is that they're just so consumer unfriendly. The consumers are finding new ways of doing things. They're finding new ways to invest, new ways to get loans. Consumers don't really like how the stock market works. They don't like the big stock market firms. You know, they're tired of getting 2% on their money. You think the stockbroker firms are making 2%? I guarantee they're making a lot more than that, and they're pocketing a lot of the difference. But by the time the investors get paid, there's nothing left. And that's just a big part of how it is. There's just all sorts of stuff that happens, you know, very, very complex. And it's a subject for a different discussion.
I think we're at a time when people really want to do business with people, not with nameless, faceless companies that treat them like a number, not a person. And that's just, you know, the way that it is, and it's affecting the money business even more than other kinds of businesses. That goes right back to what you said earlier, that if you really want your business to be successful, you've got to serve, and you've really got to be there as a person, not just as a business.
That's it, you know. And if you're really good at what you do, then this is going to come naturally to you. It really, if you're not pulling on people's leg, if you're really good at what you do, and you really like what you do, and you really like the people that you work with, your clients, it should not be hard for you to treat them with this level of respect.
Exactly. It really shouldn't. And if it is hard, then maybe you're not in the right business yet.
Precisely.
That's what my whole business is about. It's about teaching people to find that business that they really can be passionate about, that they can really find the customers that they are so excited about working with that it doesn't feel like a job. It doesn't feel like a business. It just feels like fun constantly.
Yeah.
And it really can be that. You and I are living proof of it. I'll never forget Sandusky, because the way that we had the entire event set up, especially our after-hours things, it was designed to get the people that are the gurus, the people that were on the stage, interacting with the people in the crowd.
And I have to tell you that it was one of the most fun professional activities I've ever done. I mean, I loved doing it. I loved hanging with the people. We all went out to dinner and had cocktails and all the fun things. I mean, I just thought, besides being a great seminar organizer, you were like one of the great party planners I've ever come across. It was just fantastic.
Well, we did some things that are not very typical, right? So
yeah.
In a four-day event, we had three nights that we had planned activities. Like, we brought in buses to take people as a group out to dinner. And we planned where people would sit every night so that every night you got exposed to a different group of people. And it just made it that much more fun to be there. You got more out of the networking at dinner than you did out of the seminar room all day.
Yeah. Hey, so when are you doing another one? Because I want to come.
You know, I just was part of an event a couple weeks ago that was someone else's event. I was kind of the background person. And because of that event, which was not that successful, I must say, I have been asked that question more in the last month than I have in the last 7 years. So I am helping co-host an event in August called Marketing Mayhem that's actually an event being put on by the guys at JV Zoo. And a lot of what I did at my events will be done at that event as well. So we should definitely talk about that, Joel. But I'm really thinking 2015 might be the year for Directions U to bring back a live event or so. It's been a long time since I've done live events. I got out of the live event business because of it got so hard to put butts in seats. If I'm going to do a live event, it's a very different live event than I did in 2007. That event was designed to generate leads, right? It was meant to bring new customers into my world and bring them into coaching. That would be a different reason for doing a live event today. Today, if we're doing a live event, the live event is really with our high-end customers, the people already in my world, in my coaching program, to do what we've been talking about the entire show, really serve them even better, and to bring in great people like you and other friends of mine that have amazing content that can really help even further the relationship with my high-end customers. I think that kind of an event would be a ton of fun.
You know, those kinds of people who already are having some success, who really understand, you know, where the pieces are missing because they're not beginners, really could benefit from some advanced skills training. And I would certainly support that and like to be part of it.
Well, and DU is growing so much this year that, you know, it doesn't even have to be a small, intimate gathering. We could easily have 75 to 100 people at that kind of an event this year.
Fantastic.
So I think it's certainly time for it. Linda, you want to jump back in for a bit?
I would love to. You know, I think one of the things that's so valuable about this conversation we're having is, you know, this Thursday I'm actually spending the day teaching a masterclass in entrepreneurship for business owners and entrepreneurs who are flying in from around the world. It's really going to be very cool. So, one of the things that's been fascinating is I've been working with the people who are organizing the event on the administrative side is how to create engagement that builds relationships. And so, you know, they had planned this day. I love, you know, this whole conversation about how to create events that really strengthen relationships, is they had planned a day that was just going to be a lot of experts standing on stage speaking, and I sort of raised the flag and said, nope, we're going to turn this on its head and actually figure out how we weave conversation among the participants throughout the entire event in order for them to know who's in the room, know who are potential collaborators, know who are potential vendors, know, you know, really turn it into a good, solid day of relationship building. And that's relationship done face-to-face, and that opens the door for people building on those relationships for weeks to come, months to come, for just for knowing each other and for referring work to each other and for collaborating on work together. And I think it's in the same way that you've been talking about micro lending. It's like, how do we start with micro relationship building?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, as I think about it, I can't even begin to tell you how many substantial relationships in my life have generated from the internet, from LinkedIn. You know, I'll call somebody on the phone, they'll connect with me in like LinkedIn some way, and they'll make something happen. And the bottom line is that, you know, the thing develops because you pick up the telephone. You meet them the way you meet them, but the way you really go to the next level is going to be to get on the telephone, get face-to-face, get something, and have some experience with them, you know, have some commonality. So if you can encourage people to do the next step, I can't even tell you how many times on LinkedIn I'll do an advanced search for some kind of a person. There was a time when I was working on some venture deal one time, and I needed to find a specific expert at Lowe's, the home goods company, that was in the tile department. He was a buyer for a certain, you know, tile product. And I found somebody that looked pretty close. While I asked for him, like I know him since kindergarten, because you can always find the phone number of the company at the main headquarters. I called the company. I asked for the guy. The guy gets on the phone. And I said, hey, I found you on LinkedIn. And the guy, he paused for a second, like I was just from like Mars, and he said, I can't believe it. No one ever called me from LinkedIn before. And you know, it's my little secret weapon that I'm just sharing with thousands of people on the radio right now, but it's really the trick. Is you get people, you treat them like they're people, and they really like it. And they really, really like it. And so I would encourage that, you know. How you get them to raise their hands, that's a different skill. But the next level is really important, and you really have to get it to the next level.
And I love what you just shared. But, you know, we're all trying to figure out how to leverage social media, and too many of the people that I start my work with think of social media as a place for trying to create bulk transactions, bulk communication, and there's no relationship in there. It's only the first sparkle at the end of a firecracker that maybe just gets people's attention, but there's no relationship in that. And so I love what you shared about the fact that while everybody else is just looking at each other's LinkedIn profiles or maybe even sending messages to each other, which so often just read just like marketing copy, that you're turning the whole thing on its head, which is you're using it in order to find someone you're interested in, and you're expressing that interest by getting on the phone, that old-fangled device called a phone, and actually having a real conversation with someone.
You know, one of the things about Facebook, one of the things I don't like about it, and I barely use it, is people use Facebook to brag, very insincerely. Guess what? I'm at this fancy restaurant. Guess what? I'm at this vacation spot. Guess what? You know, I don't think that engenders a relationship building. I just don't think that level of insincerity is very helpful. And that's, to me, Facebook is just filled with, insincere self-promotion. And I just don't like it. I just don't think, you know, because it's not really personal. You know, even with your friends. It's one thing, I'm at my kid's soccer game and here's a picture of the kid, but so much of what goes on is self-promotion, and it's very distasteful to me. So be very careful. You know, I mean, if you're really trying to use these things as a business vehicle, I don't think your personal friends probably like it that much either, but I will especially tell you that your business prospects especially don't like it. And, you know, be somebody that they're going to like, somebody who's genuine, sincere, helpful, trustworthy, you know, whatever, and then people will like it. And that's the name of the game.
And we've been talking about this time span, in a sense, from 2006, 2007 to today. And the Internet is still in the stage of being the wild, wild west. So all of these new programs, social media, everything is changing every 3 months, every 6 months. The velocity with which opportunities are being created for connecting with people, that are constantly being born, and yet at the same time, I think we're going to keep finding these cycles that you're describing so beautifully, which is it's going to keep coming back to actually having real experience with people through conversation, whether it's face-to-face at a conference, whether it's voice-to-voice through a telephone. And yes, I will include, you know, a Skype version of face-to-face or voice-to-voice and so on, but that is where true relationships are crafted. It's getting off of automatic, getting off of what your kids are doing like you described, where it's sending, you know, quick messages back and forth while multitasking on other things, and finding ways to get back to being in direct focus, direct attention, direct connection with people in order to build relationships. And I thank you so much for all the ways you've described it today. I think it's so important for people to hear it.
Well, listen, I'm glad to have the opportunity to share it. And, you know, a lot of people have been very good to me. And the extent that I can, you know, share backwards, I'm happy to do that. So, you know, I hope all's good, and I hope that everybody who, you know, is listening to your show, you know, gets some value.
When Joel, when you look ahead at the next several years and you're thinking about your own company's business growth and so on, how do you and your team talk about how to create relationships with the breadth of your team members and your customers and clients?
Well, let's focus on this crowdfunding thing because that's what's on our mind. And we're talking about it. I'm traveling around the country speaking at conferences about this because everybody wants to understand it. I'm talking about the professionals. The Wall Street people want to understand it. The bankers want to understand it. The professionals out there, you know, and the citizenry, though, in the next 5 years, they'll catch on. But, you know, but it's happening right this second. So we're thinking about setting up an investment portal, which is part of what the new law is, like an advertising vehicle, start advertising investments. And we want to own this. And we want to, you know, create a large stable of investors, some other things. And I'd like to actually talk to you guys about being involved in helping us. But, you know, one of the things that that I mentioned at a conference I was at, right now, if I sit down with an investor, my close rate is probably 3 out of 5, which is really good. I mean, there's some reasons why people wouldn't say yes. Maybe they're not right for us. Maybe they don't have enough money. Maybe our strategy doesn't work for them. There's a lot of reasons why it's not 100%. But I would say 3 out of 5 is probably pretty good. My guess is if we start getting leads from the Internet, my close rate could go down to 1 out of 10 because all of a sudden we're going to be dealing with people that are qualified very much differently than how we qualify them now. I mean, the way we qualify now, we've got a very specific, you know, funnel process that really, you know, we get them some material, they review the material, they ask questions about the material, but I get on the phone, I talk to them, and I ask questions. And there's a whole cycle of how this works, and the cycle is changing. And I'm actually hosting in a couple of weeks a boardroom event. I rented a boardroom at one of the big hotels in Las Vegas, and I've invited the most successful people from my syndication program to come and share how they're doing in a closed room event. And we're going to talk about the issues that you're bringing up. You know, how are you finding investors? What's the best way to do it? What are the things that are on the horizon that are different than your experience before? And so a lot of these things, I mean, they're very much on my mind and how we're going to work on these things. And, you know, on the one hand, my concern is that, you know, we're just going to get a lot of looky-loos using, we use the Internet to let people raise their hand instead of some of the more targeted mechanisms that we've used in the past. We're going to get a lot of these looky-loos that are just going to waste our time. And I'm rather concerned about it. So, you know, when I talk about this concept at conferences, it resonates. So people are worried about it, too.
You know, the good news, Joel, is I get most of my leads from the Internet, and yet our closing rate stays up around 85%. So it's a matter of crafting the same system in a digital world instead of an offline world. It really is.
Yeah. You know, for our symposium, we get 100% of our 100% of our stuff comes from the Internet. And, you know, and people are some curious. I mean, and that runs maybe a third, you know, because it's not for everybody. When they find out how much it costs and when they find out, you know, what the requirements are, and then there's qualification requirements to get in. So I guess what Gina brings up is a good point, and that is that we just have to have certain filters that, you know, eliminate people before we have the phone call. So we just have to build the system. We've got a system right now that we've built based on our current understanding of the current environment. The new environment is going to force us to create something new and different. And I think,
yep.
Gina, that you could be a good addition to our team if you're interested.
I'd love to help you with that, Joel. Really would. That's certainly what my forte is. It's just a matter of really getting into the head of the customer and figuring out how we can both serve them to the best of our abilities and set up a system that allows them to raise their hand as they're moving through the system. It really can be as simple as that. It's just a matter of looking at it from both sides. So we are out of time today. Thank you so much, Joel. I am sure we're having you back sometime in the very near future. And we will definitely bring up the whole topic of crowdfunding because that's certainly something of interest to my audience for sure.
Well, listen,
thank you so much, Linda. Great. And Linda, can we remind folks on how they can find Joel?
Absolutely. And the quickest and easiest way is if you go to the show notes, you're going to see the links for Joel for the two sites that he described as well as his phone number. So you'll always be able to reach him there.
Thank you so much, Joel. Thank you, Linda. And Linda and I will be back next week, same time, same place, for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.